It's all going off, as they say, at The Sun. The arrest of five more senior journalists from the paper, bringing the total to 10, on the basis of information handed to the police by the company itself, has sparked a furious reaction, some of it from within the company. Here's former political editor and still senior columnist Trevor Kavanagh.
Well, there's certainly a mood of unhappiness that the company is proudly, certain parts of the company, not News International, I hasten to add, not the newspaper side of the operation, actually boasting that they're sending information to the police which have put these people I've just described into police cells.
And there are signs of the disturbance spreading to other newspapers in the group. On Monday, The Times published a piece questioning the company's actions in handing information about its own journalist contacts straight to the police. And today published an op-ed piece by renowned human rights lawyer Geoffrey Robertson, essentially accusing The Times owner News Corporation and, by implication, its chairman Rupert Murdoch, of betraying the first rule of journalism: always protect your sources. When I spoke to him a little earlier today, I asked him what the problem was with the News Corp investigation.
What seems to be happening, and I'm relying on what I read in the Times itself, is that the management committee has invited in a squad of police who are in News Corp offices in Wapping and are being given all the emails that seem to show relationships between Sun journalists, connections with public officials, MOD people, police, and so forth.
So if they are finding what they regard on the face of it as evidence of significant wrongdoing, given the situation the company's in, they really have no choice but to hand it over.
Well, they do have a choice, and the problem is that it is the most fundamental tenet of journalism, which every journalist worth his or her salt knows, is that you must not betray your sources. And this is actually part of a European court judgment, a Europe-wide aspect of freedom of speech, because quite frankly, if journalists could not keep their sources secret, we wouldn't get the amount of news, public interest news, that we do get.
The argument, though, would be that, you know, should anonymity shouldn't be offered or indeed honoured where the contact involves the commission of criminal acts.
But how on earth do we know that there is a criminal act involved? Journalists are entitled to meet sources, they can take them to lunch. What they've got to do, and it's their duty, to cultivate sources, particularly in government, particularly where there are spin doctors who try to spin the news. The journalist has to cultivate sources to find out the truth. So he has a moral and indeed legal duty to keep them secret. Now they're typed into computers, and the computers are the property of your employer. So the employer can breach the source's confidence and hand it over to the police when there's no wrongdoing at all.
If they find prima facie evidence of corrupt behaviour, of payments to police officers, let's say, for example, if they find evidence to suggest that that's what's happened, they have to hand it over. Or what
how else should they do it? I mean, this is idiotic. There is no duty on anyone to give information to the police. Significant amounts of money changed hands to obtain the truth about parliamentary expenses, to obtain, sometimes it's necessary. It's what they have a duty, what News Corp has a duty as employer, before they hand journalists over for prosecution, is to get in criminal experts to talk to the journalists, to take, to make some investigation themselves. If they find that a journalist has been bribing police or prison officers, then obviously that is a matter for handing over to the police.
How damaging do you think what the Management Standards Committee are up to, what they're doing, how damaging potentially for the rest of the journalistic business, if you like, might what's happening there be?
I think it has the potential to be very damaging, because never before have you had a wholesale and apparently admitted handover of journalists' sources who have been, let's face it, promised anonymity. And that promise has been destroyed by order of the journalists' employers.
You point out in your article that the European Court has upheld this important principle of journalism. Might there be a case for taking some action at the European Court to prevent the Management Standards Committee from doing this?
There certainly might be, not that the European Court would be the first stop.
So you don't think that this could be summarised as the Sun getting its comeuppance?
No, I don't think, you know, tabloid journalism has its value. It also, of course, has been responsible for some dreadful things, and we've seen that coming out because of the phone hacking scandal. But at the end of the day, the Sun and other tabloid papers have exposed important public interest stories, and if their sources are vulnerable, then I think there'll be a lot less public interest stories, not just to the tabloids, but to other papers as well.
Geoffrey Robertson. Well, I'm joined by veteran Guardian editor and now Observer columnist Peter Preston and Professor of Journalism at Kingston University and prominent member of the Hacked Off campaign on press and media standards, Brian Cathcart. Gents, many thanks for coming. Brian, is Geoffrey Robertson right that what's going on here is especially serious for journalism?
Well, yes, he's right, but we have to see it in some sort of context. It's only 3 weeks since News International was in court admitting to wholesale phone hacking by the News of the World and effectively admitting to a cover-up by management. And the judge said there was evidence in his view that there'd been lying to police by executives and attempts to destroy evidence.
Although that was in connection with phone hacking.
That was in connection with phone hacking, but we're talking about the same company.
The same company, but isn't there a case to say, though, that when you start fiddling about with or interfering with or revealing the details of journalists' contacts, that you're playing a much more difficult game?
Well, it's more... I would just, if I could finish that point, where does the public interest lie here? Well, one of, besides the phone hacking scandal, one of the areas of great concern is the relationship between journalists and the Metropolitan Police. We saw that hacking was not investigated, and it gave rise to great suspicions about the position of the Metropolitan Police. So there is a powerful public interest in understanding the relationship between News International and the Met.
But it does look as if, doesn't it, the contacts are being exposed here, which have nothing to do with the Met. There was a serving military personnel, some serving military personnel, and there was someone from the MOD, were arrested last Saturday.
Yes, it does. It just suggests to me that the problem is wider. But I think, actually, the interest of journalists at the Sun is served best by cleaning this up, by clearing it up, by re-establishing trust in the journalism that's going on there.
Peter Preston, what's your take on this?
I very much agree with Geoffrey Robertson, actually. He's making some extremely solid points. The difficulty here is, not to disagree with Brian, but this is not hacking. This is something, it's a completely different part of the forest, and it's a different paper, for that matter. And what you're seeing now is a general trawl by management, flip-flopping from their previous position, handing over vast mountains of stuff to the Met to trawl through. Remember Sue Akers telling Leveson, the assistant commissioner in charge of it all, telling Leveson last week that she was nearer the beginning than the end with Elverdon. There are months of this stuff to come. And I think we ought to remember, just as we're sort of sitting around watching Leveson and saying, wasn't Chris Jeffries, the guy in Bristol, the schoolteacher, treated awfully because he was arrested and then the press went much too far? I think we ought to remember, even though it's the Sun, some people would say, that all we have at the moment is arrests in this case. We have no charges. The thing is just mounting up, and it's to build too much of an edifice of opprobrium on it seems to me vastly overdone.
And would you go along with Trevor Kavanagh's description of it as a witch hunt?
I can see if you're on the Sun, you might feel that. What I do think from the outside is that it will have a chilling effect on sources all the way around the shop. It's moving on, I understand it, to the Times and the Sunday Times. I think the Yard has, with so many cases building up, has totally lost track of the situation. Remember, the Director of Public Prosecutions has gone away and said, I'll be back in 6 weeks with the definition of the public interest. The public interest is vital to all of these individual cases if they turn to charges. And yet, the arrests go on as though he wasn't working on the actual basis for conviction or not.
Brian, what about Robertson's argument or suggestion that News Corporation should go through some process of trying to establish in in their own minds some sense of public interest as it relates to evidence before they hand it over, or particular stories or evidence or indications before they hand it over to the police.
Well, I don't trust them, and neither does the judge at the High Court. Why would you? I mean, I've been, you know, writing about the hacking scandal for years, begging them to take it seriously, demanding that they cooperate properly with the police. They dragged their heels all the way. We know the depth of the scandal there now. Why would I trust them now? So, why would anybody trust them now to do the right thing?
So do you think, is there any other way that News Corporation could handle this?
I don't think so, no. I think this is the way it has to be. And as I say, the journalists on The Sun can only benefit from house cleaning.
Even though the fact is that doing journalism requires you to deal with contacts, requires you to offer them anonymity on occasion, confidentiality, other people won't talk to you. If people don't believe they can talk to journalists without the possibility of the journalist's own company handing over the information to the police for whatever reason, then they're not going to talk to them, are they?
Well, you know, I didn't get them into this pickle. The hackers got them into this pickle. And let's bear in mind, as Peter says, nothing here has come to trial yet. Nothing has even come to charges yet. If it comes to trial, they will be able to make the case, should there be one, that there is a public interest in what they're doing.
What about, Peter, what about the way in which the journalists were arrested? I mean, it does seem that, you know, there were sort of, I think, 10 or 15 policemen at each individual house. It was kind of done very early in the morning. It was...
Oh, my mind went back 4 years to in Poole, Dorset. And there's a similar squad on the door of Harry Redknapp, banging on the door. Mrs. Redknapp is in tears. Harry is met at the airport and carted off to prison, to the police station, and done over for 24 hours. And now we see, 4 years later, what that amounted to. I think the Yard is, and police generally, are much too flamboyant and demonstrative about all of this stuff. If, as Brian rightly says, this is only an arrest which from which charges may or may not follow, why the hoopla?
Do you think there are any long-term implications for the way this is being done?
I think there are. I think the Yard is overreacting. I'm remembering only a few weeks ago when the new commissioner seemed bent on hauling Amelia Hill of The Guardian in and trying to force her to disclose her sources on hacking. There had to be a good deal of fuss, a lot of battling back and forth before that was dropped. I don't trust the police to be sensible, frankly.
And what do you think is the likely longer term? Rupert Murdoch has been at pains to say through Tom Mockridge, the chief executive of News International, that he's determined to hold on to the newspaper and carry on publishing it. Do you think that's true?
I think that's his view. I mean, the difficulty is that nobody knows. There they are with a vast pile of material, shoveling it over to the Met. Charges seem to be averaging about two a week at the moment. If it goes on at this rate, then there may be nothing left to save, and what he says will be just irrelevant.
OK. Peter Preston, Brian Cathcart, many thanks indeed. And if you've thought about that...
Rupert Murdoch flew into Luton Airport last night, on a private plane, I should say, not on EasyJet, to attend to the crisis at the Sun newspaper. 10 current or former reporters and executives there have been arrested, and there is anger among the staff at the paper who feel betrayed by the parent company, News Corp. It set up an independent management and standards committee to look into phone hacking and all related accusations. It's the committee which has handed police evidence leading to some of the arrests. Well, first, let's hear from our reporter Mike Thompson at Wapping.
In front of me here in Wapping, to the left of News International's familiar tall white building, are the offices of the Management and Standards Committee. The MSC was set up by News Corporation last June as an independent body tasked with getting to the bottom of the phone hacking scandal. And inside these walls, 100 top lawyers, as well as police officers, forensic advisers and IT professionals, are hard at work investigating the actions of some of The Sun's most senior journalists. They'll be trawling through several hundred million emails, along with phone records, expenses claims and various other documents. Apparently there's so much paperwork that it can't fit into the offices in front of me, so it's being stored at secret warehouses elsewhere. Much of this work is being done in soundproof rooms, just to ensure that nothing reaches the ears of newspaper staff. In recent days, journalists at The Sun have been especially angered by their management's decision to pass on details about their sources to the police without their consent or that of their sources. But following such anger, I've been told that investigators are taking great care to protect legitimate journalistic privilege, sources, private and personal information, and legal privilege. But also that information considered irrelevant to the investigation is being redacted. Investigators will particularly be looking for any evidence of illicit payments, which have been alleged to involve sizable sums to public officials. In other words, material that would confirm that News International journalists have taken part in any criminal acts. The News Corporation has declined to comment on claims made in some newspapers yesterday that payments of tens of thousands of pounds may have been involved in the alleged wrongdoings. The corporation has also declined to comment on how long this investigation is expected to take.
Mike Thompson there. Well, The Sun's associate editor, Trevor Kavanagh, has criticised the work of the Management and Standards Committee. In an interview on The World at One, he rejected the suggestion from a News International source that the company was a swamp that needs draining.
I think that that is an appalling suggestion, and it is resented bitterly and deeply by those many excellent journalists who have worked loyally for the company for most of their working lives. There is unease about the way that some of the best journalists in Fleet Street have ended up being arrested on evidence which the MSC has handed to the police. I think there is unease on that.
That's Trevor Kavanagh. And it's not just the journalists at The Sun who are cross. I think the Daily Mail had a leader suggesting the Management and Standards Committee should hold its head in shame at handing sources over to the police. Let's talk to Bob Satchwell, Director of the Society of Editors, who's on the line now, and Chandu Krishnan, who's Executive Director of Transparency International. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Bob Satchwell, you have some concerns about what this group, the MSC, have done in handing over sources.
Yes, I think we're into the realms of the law of unintended consequences here in an attempt to clear up past mistakes and to try and set records straight and to be open with police inquiries and so on. You get into a stage where there is a chilling effect on journalism. There is concern about the protection of sources. The problem is, of course, that ever since this story started going, you know, with phone hacking and so on, is that we've had a lot of conjecture, a lot of allegations, and precious little solid evidence. And the difficulty is that until we get to that, there are mistakes being made along the way. What we've got, I mean, Trevor Kavanagh is a highly respected journalist. You can understand his concerns. Highly respected political journalist, and if he's concerned, all of us perhaps should be concerned. What we've got to avoid is journalism itself being damaged,
but you're
because
not
journalism is in the public interest.
You're not suggesting that investigative journalists on serious stories would in any way be put out by all of this, are you? I mean,
I think certainly the journalists I speak to are concerned. They're saying, because they don't know precisely where this police inquiry is going, and of course, you know, part of the conjecture is whether the people who've been arrested may have done something which part of the evidence might be to do with their expenses or whatever. They say, well, can I ever talk to a policeman again? That kind of thing.
They just don't know where it's going. Sorry, have you spoken to serious journalists doing what one might call sort of investigative stuff, as opposed to the celebrity end?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean,
they're saying they're worried, are they? They're saying they're worried because they think they may have their sources handed over to the police.
They're certainly concerned about the sources issue and the fact that their sources might be revealed. Who knows? And they're certainly concerned about where it is going, because there's no clear definition of where the police inquiry is going, and there's no clear definition of what might be considered a public interest defence.
Understood. Chandu Krishnan, from the Transparency International perspective, is what is going on compatible with a properly free press, I mean, that is not accountable to the police or the politicians?
We're very concerned about the situation. I think the media, by and large, do wish to conduct themselves ethically. And it's very sad that allegations that certain sections of the media may have engaged in criminal behavior is tarnishing the reputation of the media as a whole. And I think that's the reason why it is so important that if illegal payments have been made by journalists to gain information, giving themselves an unfair advantage over competitors who don't pay bribes,
they're investigative journalism, because
this is the allegation, that improper, corrupt payments have been made to public officials in order to gain information to provide stories.
So from a Transparency International point of view, because you're the sort of people who worry about corruption and you like free press and transparency, you're more worried about the corruption than you are about the attack on the press that appears to be occurring, so-called witch hunt.
No, we're concerned about corruption, but at the same time, we do believe that corruption can be investigated without undermining the important principle of the freedom of the press to protect its sources. We think the two are not incompatible.
And at the moment, you think you're happy with the way that is going, or you're not happy?
Well, I think we need to see how the situation will unfold. But I think it's very important to stress that if bribery has taken place, it's very important that it be investigated thoroughly.
Bob Satchwell, do you recognise the word bribery for what a lot of journalists have apparently engaged in making payments to police officers for stories?
I don't know. Well, I don't know what the evidence is.
I'm not talking about these particular cases. No, I'm not talking about these particular cases. That would be incorrect. But just in general, it is often alleged that journalists make payments to police, to coppers for stories. Is that a bribe? Do you use the word?
Bear in mind this, that there are times, and the law has recognised this in the past, when if there is a public interest in revealing something, and if the only way of revealing that information requires a payment in some way, that is legitimate. And so there are public interest reasons for doing it.
And you're not confident that when these things emerge that the public interest defence will be recognised? Or do you think there is a public interest defence in all these cases?
Well, there is no public interest defence in any part of the law other than the Data Protection Act at the moment. And one of the issues that arose when the new Bribery Act was being brought in, we raised these kinds of issues with the government and indeed with police officers and with prosecutors and said, look, there could be a problem here. And that's why the DPP is now looking at delivering some regulations and some rulings so that we all know what the true position should be on this.
I think to an extent, or large extent, he's done that. Not entirely, because obviously there are big questions still remaining and there's still the prospect of further arrests. I'm also slightly puzzled about his pledge that the arrested journalists can return to work, which, as I understand it, the bail conditions mean they're not meant to talk to each other. So quite how you actually operate that, where the deputy editor can't talk to the chief reporter or whatever, is interesting. I would have thought that might require a court application to change the bail terms.
Or someone who's very good at doing the rota. on the question of the decision to launch, is he really launching a newspaper to quell rebellion in his ranks?
No, it was always on the drawing board. I think Rupert Murdoch probably privately regrets the closure of the News of the World. It was a decision taken because of the backlash over Millie Dowler, the quite correct backlash over Millie Dowler and the threatened advertising boycott, and perhaps above all, the lingering hope that the Biscay Bee bid could still be salvaged. And it was probably a decision, I think, Rupert was giving James Murdoch his head, acquiesced in rather than actually leading from the front. So, and I think what's going to happen, my hunch would be that the...
And we know how good your hunches are.
Maybe not always, but the Sun on Sunday will be essentially the Sun, but it will incorporate some of the traditional Sunday tabloid, the best part of it, namely the News of the World at its investigatory best, the sort of News of the World that exposed the Pakistan cricket spot-fixing scandal rather than... and it certainly won't involve the sort of appalling industrial-scale phone hacking that occupied a four-year period only in this paper's history when the lunatics were allowed to take over the asylum.
Stay with us. Chris Bryant, what do you think about this announcement?
Well, I think it's deeply cynical, or rather it was deeply cynical to close the News of the World a year ago to try and protect the Murdoch family themselves, which meant that the workers on the News of the World, many of whom were completely and utterly innocent, paid the price for management failure. But I think it's very premature because Many people may think that because the Leveson inquiry has been going on for some time that we know everything there is to know. I know there is a great deal more still to know because Leveson has been skirting around the criminal investigation. I think that a lot of people will feel that this is Rupert Murdoch basically putting two fingers up to British public opinion. And I suspect it won't fly. I think a lot of advertisers will think, well, yes, it might be nice to be in a mass publication, but actually, you know, News International themselves have said in recent weeks that they are still draining the swamp. Those are their words, not mine. I don't see how the swamp can bring forth another creature that people would want to see on the streets.
And yet, given your concern for the innocent people who were at the News of the World, shouldn't a bunch of innocent people at The Sun have an opportunity to do what many other newspapers do these days, be part of a seven-day operation and talk to their readers on a Sunday as well?
Well, that's why I worry that this is deeply cynical, because I suspect that Rupert Murdoch always wanted to create The Sun on Sunday and save a whole load of costs for his business, and that's maybe, you know, what he did all the time, tried to ride public opinion to do that. But I think there is a real issue about, you know, that apparently all the journalists, even if they're charged by the police, are going to be allowed to continue in their job. Well, that, apart from, as has already been said, deliberately, as far as I can see, flouting the opinion of the court with regard to the bail conditions applied, I think it's pretty extraordinary that newspapers that thus far have always campaigned for people in public office when they are charged by the police to be suspended should be adopting exactly the opposite position now. It's a bit like, I mean, would you ever believe that Sun journalists would suddenly start claiming that the Human Rights Act should be used to defend them? Oh, no, sorry, they started doing that on Tuesday, didn't they?
Paul Conyer, you're shaking your head.
Well, on a pure point of detail, Rupert Murdoch's statement says that, in fact, they can return to work until charges are laid. So that is slightly different.
Sorry, I misunderstood that then.
But there's an interesting point. I mean, Rupert Murdoch has seized back some of the PR ground here. I mean, last time it's been a PR disaster all the way through, and last time he was so badly briefed when he arrived off the back of the Millie Dowler revelations, the News of the World closure, and made his priority in front of the cameras to say it was Rebecca Brooks rather than the public, the storm of public outrage at Millie Dowler is a lesson he's learned. But there are, the public don't feel the same way about the allegation against The Sun at this stage, just as they didn't feel the same way about the News of the World until the Millie Dowler story broke, which was a seismic shift in the public mood.
And Chris Bryant, I just wonder, isn't part of your situation that you just don't really like News International much, you don't like News Corporation much?
No, I don't have a view about whether I like it or not.
I'm asking you, what is your view? Do you like them?
well,
say something nice about them.
I think News International newspapers have written some very important stories that have exposed corruption in this country. However, they have also effectively corrupted the Metropolitan Police by paying police officers. They have also tried, and also incidentally by having such a close relationship with the Metropolitan Police that the Metropolitan Police never properly investigated what went on at the News of the World, let alone at The Sun and at the other titles. They systematically lied to Parliament year after year, saying it was just one rogue reporter. Oh no, it wasn't just one rogue reporter, it was a few more. And then they threw a newspaper over the side of the ship, and then eventually they had to own up that it wasn't just one newspaper, it was several newspapers.
Paul Conyer?
Yeah. My bottom line is, I just do one final thing, which is, I don't think any one person should have four major national titles and a majority shareholding of the biggest broadcaster in the country. That is too much power in one person's hands.
All right, Chris
it
Bryant.
Makes politicians into feeble souls.
Thank you, Paul Conyer. Last word.
Rupert Murdoch, I think, has learned a few lessons here, and I don't think that he could be blameless at all, but I don't think he actually knew was about the full extent of the phone hacking scandal, even when he made that famous appearance before the select committee.
I'm grateful to both of you. Thank you very much. Paul Conyer, former deputy editor of the News of the World, and Chris Bryant, Labour MP. 5:17, an update from Susan.
The chief executive of News International, Rupert Murdoch, has confirmed plans to launch a new Sunday edition of his Sun newspaper. In an email to staff, he also said that journalists arrested for making alleged illegal payments to police would be allowed to return to work because they were innocent until proven guilty. The Labour MP, Chris Bryant, who's campaigned for the exposure of phone hacking, told this programme he didn't think there was much public appetite for a new Murdoch tabloid.
I suspect it won't fly. I think a lot of advertisers will think, well, yes, it might be nice to be in a mass publication, but actually, you know, News International themselves have said in recent weeks that they are still draining the swamp. Those are their words, not mine. I don't see how the swamp can bring forth another creature that people would want to see on the streets.
BBC News at 6 o'clock. This is Neil Sleat. Good evening. Rupert Murdoch has reacted to the crisis engulfing his media empire by announcing that he'll launch a new tabloid newspaper. He told News International staff they had his unwavering support and that The Sun on Sunday would be rolled out very soon. The media tycoon Rupert Murdoch has confronted the growing crisis within his empire by telling beleaguered staff he's launching a new Sunday newspaper. The announcement comes 7 months after he was forced to close the News of the World because of the hacking scandal. He told journalists at The Sun that a Sunday version of the paper would appear very soon, adding that the tabloid was one of his proudest achievements. Tensions at The Sun have been running high in recent weeks because of the arrests of 9 employees suspected of making illegal payments to officials. Mr. Murdoch has now said all of those involved will be allowed to return to work because they were innocent until proven guilty. But he also insisted that illegal activities could not be tolerated. Our first report tonight is from our media correspondent, Torrin Douglas.
As Rupert Murdoch arrived at Wapping this morning, he faced a company in turmoil. Journalists on The Sun were in open revolt, blaming him and his company News Corp for giving police the information that led to the arrests of senior colleagues and their alleged sources. The Times had weighed in too, giving the human rights lawyer Geoffrey Robertson space to argue that news organisations had a moral duty to protect their sources. This morning he explained why.
There's been a lot of illegality in hacking, phone hacking and hacking emails. But what happens now is that their public interest investigations have come under focus and their sources that they have promised to protect, that they have a moral duty to protect, are being given up to the police by their own employers. And this is unprecedented.
Yet tonight, Rupert Murdoch seems to have regained the initiative, announcing the launch very soon of The Sun on Sunday and declaring his unwavering support for The Sun's journalists. In the newsroom, he told them theirs was one of the world's finest papers, calling it a part of me and one of our finest achievements. The Sun on Sunday was widely believed to have been shelved after the arrests, partly because so many senior Sun journalists had been suspended. Those suspensions have now been lifted. But the Labour MP, Chris Bryant, a victim of the News of the World's phone hacking, accused Mr. Murdoch of a cynical move.
I think that a lot of people will feel that this is Rupert Murdoch basically putting two fingers up to British public opinion. News International themselves have said in recent weeks that they are still draining the swamp. Those are their words, not mine. I don't see how the swamp can bring forth another creature that people would want to see on the streets.
Further uncertainties remain. The American parent company News Corp, in contrast to the newspaper man Rupert Murdoch, is disenchanted with UK papers because of the legal fallout of phone hacking and the poor economic prospects for newspapers. They may not be able to stop him, but will News Corp shareholders really want to invest more money in a new British paper at a time of such uncertainty?
The announcement has reaffirmed Mr. Murdoch's commitment to the struggling newspaper he bought in 1969 and turned into Britain's biggest-selling daily. A winning paper, he said, would be the best answer to his critics. He's also reassured hundreds of News International journalists who feared for their future. Our correspondent, Nick Higham, considers this latest move from one of media's shrewdest and most unpredictable operators.
Rupert Murdoch's always relished bravura gestures. Just when you think he's on the back foot, he manages to come out fighting. He was the man who broke the power of the print unions in Fleet Street by setting up a brand new printing plant at Wapping and brought multi-channel pay TV to Britain with the launch of Sky. The past 8 months have been dreadful for him and his company. The phone hacking scandal at the News of the World led to the title's closure and the collapse of an attempt to take full control of Sky, and 9 Sun journalists have been arrested. But in confirming plans to launch a Sunday edition of The Sun, he's managed to restore some of his journalists' battered morale and demonstrate his own largely emotional commitment to newspapers in general and The Sun in particular. But it's not clear how big a hole in the Sunday market the News of the World's closure has left. 2/3 of the News of the World's 2.7 million buyers switched immediately to rival titles, but many have since stopped buying a Sunday paper entirely. Could a Sun on Sunday lure them back, or have they been lost to the newspaper market for good, like so many other newspaper readers? And how many of the 2.7 million people who buy the Sun on a weekday, many presumably on the way to work, will buy it 7 days a week?